there, everybody. It is Thursday, February 14th. It is Valentine's Day. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us an email. Send it on over to Ken at thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. And of course, go to the Facebook. You have an account. We know you do. Type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. So much ground to cover. We must get started with our first guest. Tyler Oakley is a self-proclaimed professional fangirl. His YouTube channel has hundreds and hundreds of thousands of subscribers, and these clips have been viewed over 43 million times. He is one of the most authentic, energy-filled voices you are going to find out there in new media. Tyler Oakley, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And a happy Valentine's Day to you, sir.
Happy Valentine's Day to you, too, I guess. Do you have anybody in your life?
It's just me and you today, Tyler.
Well, then, there you go. Perfect. That's all I wanted.
Because that was going to be question one. Big Valentine's Day plans?
I am just going to sulk in my my singlehood and probably eat until I fall asleep. So that's probably it.
All right. It was great having you on the show, Tyler. Have a great day.
No, I'm actually probably going to be doing like a live stream or something. Usually, I think last Valentine's Day, I did a little live show for all of my other fellow single people. So we will all be together and support each other.
That.
We'll be like a little support group.
Creating family on this Valentine's Day. Love it.
Of course.
Now we have to deconstruct what it is that you do. If for some reason one of our listeners has not seen you on YouTube, what exactly is a professional fangirl?
Well, so I make videos on YouTube. I try to do it once a week. But basically what I do is I kind of use YouTube as a platform as like a little diary. And sometimes it's like an update in my life, and sometimes it's commentary on pop culture. So that's where the professional fangirl kind of comes into play. But at the end of the day, it's very much me kind of documenting my life, and I've been doing it since 2007.
What do you remember about those first couple episodes that you put up there in 2007?
They're terrible. They're the worst. And I'm sure you can attest, whenever you create something and it's kind of like a progression from the beginning to where you are now, you always look back at whatever started the whole thing and see like, oh my gosh, I would have edited that differently.
Right.
Oh my gosh, I would have done this differently, which is great because it kind of shows how far I've come. A lot of the videos are still public, but the very first ones are private because back then it was just to talk to friends like specifically. So yeah, there was a lot of like personal information, a lot of like, it was like 10 minutes long. Like it was terrible. So, but yeah, I think I've honed my craft now, and hopefully in the next couple of years, it'll be even better.
Now, what was that point where you realized, oh, actually, I think people are watching this?
I remember really distinctly. So this was back in college. I was a freshman in college. I had just gotten a laptop, and I was Googling, you know, something, and I saw just a video of a guy talking to a camera. And so at first it was like, oh, I could do that too, because all of my friends had gone off to different colleges. And so I wanted to use the platform to keep in touch with them and kind of show them what was going on in the dorms, blah, 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 blah. And then I remember on one of my videos, I had 100 views, and I was like, I do not have 100 friends. And so it was very much like, who else is watching? And so it kind of opened my eyes to the fact that there's kind of like a community online.
And now, I mean, how do you even wrap your mind around what's going on now?
It's really bizarre because it's hard to like think about numbers and like kind of visualize what like a big number might mean. And so nowadays, like, I try to visualize how much a population of a country compares to how many subscribers I have, and which is very bizarre and very, like, weird.
I love it.
But it helps me visualize, oh, I could fill the entire country of, you know, whatever country. It's very bizarre, but I love it. It's cool. It was really eye-opening, especially back in college, I always remembered my stadium for the football games was 75,000 people. And I remember when I crossed 75,000 people, I could visualize, because I always went to the football games. I was like, I could fill this entire stadium with people that just tune in.
Yeah.
Which is nuts.
Oh my gosh. And you've met your listeners. Have you not met like a whole bunch of them?
Yeah. So I would say that's probably the best part. So a lot of the times I do, I go around to colleges and I speak about, you know, LGBT activism and how it's kind of changed with the online space and how you can get involved online. So I go and do stuff like that and I talk, but my favorite part obviously is, you know, afterward, I always spend as much time as possible to meet everyone and kind of see the people that I interact with. And it's always bizarre because I see these people tweeting at me every day and they're like, hey, you favorited my tweet like 2 years ago. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like we have this relationship like that exists.
Oh yeah.
So it's really cool to be able to meet them, and not just that stuff, but also going to like VidCon or Playlist Live, which are YouTube gatherings in March and July in Florida and LA, respectfully. So it's really cool to just get out and get to meet people.
I can't even wrap my mind around. It's enough for me to do, you know, we had episode 200 a few weeks ago. It's enough for me to, well, thank you. It's enough for me to come in and record an episode, but to have a visual component where I have to think about what I'm wearing, no way.
It's a little daunting sometimes because I'm like, I just want to wear like sweatpants. But like, I mean, I could, but like, I also want to look cute. So
right, exactly.
Like, it's a challenge, but yeah, so, and then you have to like have the visual element. So you have to have like your room clean, and then you have to like have your hair perfect. And
no,
so it's like a lot of
way.
Things that seem very minuscule, but it definitely adds up into a day of production.
Yeah.
Every little thing, like if my hair is like a little bit off after I'm filming, I have to refilm it. Like I have to, like that's how my mind works. So.
And let's be clear right now, you and I look amazing right this second.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I look so cute. You look great.
Thank you. I have to say, you know, it's just a good hair day for both of us. So it's just a shame people can't see that. It's a shame.
I know. Well, they'll have to find us online elsewhere just to get a glimpse of it.
Well, three words that play into your show, and I want to get your take on all three of these words because they're pretty integral to what you do. Let's start out with sassiness. What does that word inspire in you?
I think it just means to me being true to how you feel. And even if it might ruffle some feathers, presenting it in a way that isn't meant to be mean or harm, but to entertain.
All right. That's sassiness. How about beauty?
Girl, it just comes naturally.
It's a shame. No, it's a shame one of the words isn't modesty, but yeah, we'll stick with beauty.
I'm kidding. No, I don't know. Beauty. I'm not like a beauty guru. I don't do makeup tutorials.
I'm just saying, it says right there on the YouTube channel. Here you'll find sassiness, beauty.
It says this on my YouTube channel. Oh, I must have been like drunk or something.
Well, then I'm scared to even ask you about the third word of fabulousness.
Oh, well, also, that comes naturally. I would say all three come naturally. I think they're all facets of what I bring to the table.
Yeah. Now, let's pull back the curtain a little bit, because I certainly, you know, there have been weeks where I'm like, you know, I can't do an episode this week, but we do the episode because we've made this commitment and people listen. Do you have weeks where you're like, I'm so not into this week?
Totally. I mean, especially coming from a background of having done it for 5 years.
Yeah.
Sometimes you feel like they're one of my good friends, who's also a content creator on YouTube. Her name's Tessa. She makes videos under the username Mika Kitty, but she recently did a video that was really, it spoke to me. It was very much like what it's like to be a content creator. Sometimes you feel like there's this jar of ideas, and each week you pull an idea out and you see the ideas dwindling. And sometimes that's how it feels. Or, you know, sometimes my life's not really exciting, you know,
right.
For it to be based as a diary, it's like, you know, I don't know. Or there's the pressure of, you know, I feel like I've been doing this and chugging along, and I just feel drained.
Yeah.
So one time in particular, last December, I was just like, you know what? I'm going home for Christmas for a couple weeks. I just want to be unplugged and spend time with family. I spent all year making a video every single week. I just need to take time off. So I did. Which is a great little perk to the job, but also it is a little detrimental to the brand as,
right.
You know, if you're trying to maintain viewership every week, it kind of is it's alarming when, you know, people expect it and they can't find it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Now, I have to be upfront with you because I had your back a few weeks ago on one of our episodes. And I want to put it out there and people can listen. And I had your back, but we had Willem on the show.
Oh, okay. What did Willem have to say?
Well, I don't know if you – have you not seen the episode of Willem's Beatdown that features you?
Yeah, I have seen it.
Okay.
And a lot of people – the funniest thing, people that are not Willem or me or Miles, who was also in the video that Willem was beating down, think that it was like throwing shade and being mean and he hates us and we hate each other. But when I saw it, I literally squealed because I was like, oh my God, I love Willem. Like, he can say anything he wants about me and I'll like, you know, I'll take every bit of it because it's an honor, truthfully.
Well, I had your back. I said, you know, Willem, you got to be careful when you don't want to take on Tyler Oakley's legions of fans. That's not something
that...
Yes,
he does, because they'll come and watch. He's smart.
He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. Now, I was watching, you had the opportunity to be, it's almost like you were the halftime show at the Super Bowl.
I mean, I was there for half a second in a commercial, but I will take it.
It's a resume builder. I would certainly put it on there. I would put it on there.
Oh, totally. I've already updated my LinkedIn.
How did you get to be involved with the Super Bowl?
Pepsi reached out to me a few weeks ago, kind of leading up to the Super Bowl, because they were looking to crowdsource the intro for Beyonce's halftime special. And so with that, they reached out to influencers. So I think about like 30 of us came out to New York and met with Pepsi and blah, blah, blah. And they just wanted us to tell our fans to get involved. And so it was really, you know, easy for me to do because I love pop culture. So it was obviously a good fit. So I reached out to my people and I said, you guys, let's get involved. All you have to do is submit your pictures, blah, blah, blah. And leading up to the Super Bowl, they contacted me again and they said, you know, so many of your people, we used all of their pictures.
Wow.
We should probably bring you to the Super Bowl so you can come and watch it from New Orleans and get to see everything and go to the after party and all this fun stuff. And I was like, well, I am just going to be sitting on Tumblr that weekend. So why not just go instead? So it all worked out. I found out about it like a few days before I had to fly out to New Orleans. So it was very quick, spur of the moment, but everything worked out.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. And you have done, I have seen you've done some red carpet work, have you not?
I have. That's my favorite.
How do you approach doing that? So you don't know who's going to be coming next. It's hard to be too scripted. Tell me about an event that you've done and how that's gone.
So one thing that I usually do, so far it's been the last couple of years in a row, it's been with the Trevor Project. And the Trevor Project, if you don't know, if you're listening at home, they are the leading national organization for crisis and suicide prevention for LGBT youth. So basically they're a call center that lets anybody call in if they have issues. So it's something that's obviously really important to me. I used to be an intern with them a few years ago, and ever since I've been supporting them any way I can. And so doing the red carpet just felt natural. And so even just talking to celebrities about what the Trevor Project means to them, that just felt like an easy fit. And it's exciting because it's all these people that I adore, but at the same time, it's very much easy because it's something that I support and they support. So it's just a natural conversation. And it's been so exciting because every time I see a celebrity, there are some that I fangirl over. There are some that I just love. But then there are some that I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is my number one and he's approaching. So I freak out. But usually it's live streamed so that people can watch at home. And I would say, you know, I feel like the people at home want to see one of them represented at the red carpet. So there's a difference between like most red carpets. They're very poised and professional, but I'm there to have fun and be excited and ask the questions that people are tweeting at us. So why not get excited about it?
Who was the one that you thought later and said, oh my God, I don't even know what was coming out of my mouth?
Darren Criss, always, every year, because he's my number one celebrity crush. I always feel like as soon as he approaches and then as the interview starts, I'm just like, I can't be held responsible for anything I say. I can't be held responsible for anything I do. It's a little nerve wracking. And then as he's walking away, like, I feel the adrenaline, like, calming down. It's a lot to take in.
So the men of McKinley Calendar worked for you.
Oh, yes. Yes, it did. That's all I'll say.
We'll leave it there. I very much enjoyed the episodes, in Merry Old England.
Oh my gosh, yeah. It was my first time to Europe. Usually when I go on trips, I do kind of montages of everything I do, but those were more in like Asian countries where it was all visual. And so when I was in England, I was like, you know what? I don't think it'll be kind of, you know, as impactful, the visuals. And so I wanted to collaborate a lot with content creators there. And so, I kind of took a different route, which I was nervous about. I was like, I don't know if people are going to like it, because usually I do those montages. But instead I did collaborations just with a few YouTubers that I had met at VidCon the previous year, and they were so successful. So people loved them, which was awesome, because, I mean, it's always exciting and fun to reach out to people and, you know, see what we can create together, because usually – you know, for a viewer at home, you see one person in a video, and then when you see two of your favorite YouTubers making a video together, it's like those crossover episodes and TV shows from like way back in the day,
oh,
cartoons
yeah.
or something. It's so exciting. It's the highlight of the season. So it was really fun.
You had those two young guys on who may have been 18. They might have just had their bar mitzvahs. I'm not exactly sure. It was one or the other.
They were 18.
Uh-huh. I'm not saying that I saw you drooling, but I could envision it. I could envision it.
It was, I mean, they were making me blush the entire time. They, if you don't know them, their names are Jack and Finn. They're British twins. They're hilarious and fun, and they happen to be beautiful. So everything is working out for them. But I got to make a video with them, and in our video, I explained to them some gay slang and kind of taught them gay culture, which was fun and exciting, because at the end of the day, you know, yeah, it was fun and cute and I was blushing the whole time, but I think it really spoke to, you know, where the world is right now, where three young adults can come together, one of them can be gay and just have fun, and it's not a big deal, and it's just lighthearted and, you know, supportive and loving.
Again, did I see you actually drool? No. Were you that far from it? I'm not going to say, but I would say.
I was dying. It was a lot to take in.
That's so much fun. Well, and you mentioned the Trevor Project, and folks can even go back and listen to. We were able to chat with Charles Robbins years ago on the show, and just an
I
amazing.
Love him.
Oh, the best. The best. What responsibility do you feel? I mean, you know, you're not out there necessarily to create, like, I am going to, this is social activism and I'm doing social activism every time I do this. You are, you know, there's such a lighthearted element to it, and it's you talking about you. But then there's this other piece where there is kind of a lack of young gay voices, particularly in new media, that have the type of following that you have. How do you kind of balance the true to what it is that you want to do with also some of the responsibility that kind of comes from being that voice?
Totally. Well, I would say first and foremost, being visible and being present and showing who I am is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Because there's so much nowadays, thankfully, there's a lot of representation in media. But, you know, to put myself out there might give somebody, you know, a glimpse as to what else is out there. Whereas, you know, everything is scripted, everything is reality, where there's a huge, you know, personalities. Or that, and that's all online, or I mean, on TV, or they can get online, they can Google, you know, gay vlogger, they might find me, they might find Davey Wavy, they might find,
right.
you know, all these other content creators. And sure, we might be little extremes in our own right, but I might be the flavor that they'll relate to, or Davey might be the flavor that they relate to, and I feel like that's the most important thing. But then, you know, with that audience comes a lot of responsibility,
yeah.
and I try to accept that, and I try to, you know, be conscious of that every time I go about doing something or say something. And so, yeah, there's a fine line, and I always want to keep it lighthearted, but when it comes to stuff like the Trevor Project, I feel like it's really important for me to use my platform to, you know, promote it and kind of keep it relevant and keep bringing it to my audience in fresh ways, because otherwise, you know, they run on support, so
yeah.
I need to support them, and I feel like if I support them, my audience will find ways for them to support them. Like, I use video as my platform. Maybe they have a talent that they can use in their own way to support, you know, a cause that they believe in.
Now, I have this theory, and you tell me if you agree with my theory. Having had him on the show, Davey Wavy, also years ago, I have the theory that Davey is perhaps a little bit more often shirtless than you are.
Yeah, I never do shirtless. I'm very timid. No, yeah, I mean, more power than
he is not.
He can show it, but I'm a little bit more shy and timid.
Yes, no, he had that one episode when he had maybe a collar on, but that was about it. That was about
Which is very risque for him. That's like the opposite.
Well, this brings us to that part of the show where you called the music for this week's episode. So we're going to have you tell our listening audience what some of your song selections say about Tyler Oakley. It's a little self-analysis.
Sure.
Okay. So song number one, and I know perhaps you somewhat enjoy this group. What does One Direction's Heart Attack say about Tyler Oakley?
I would say that One Direction has been a huge part of my last year. I made a video about them, and they it kind of exploded for me, and it kind of brought me a whole new group of people like watching my videos. And so One Direction has been awesome. Heart Attack specifically, I guess, is my reaction to it all. And especially this past year has been a huge explosion of everything, viewer-wise, subscriber-wise, everything has been blowing up. So it's kind of been like a little heart attack for me.
Wow. You like the One Direction, do you not?
I do. I love them. It's fun. It's just, you know, it's unapologetically just fun.
Yeah. No, they're very enjoyable. Very enjoyable. I have my One Direction Pandora channel. It gets me through the treadmill. It works.
There
it works.
You go. That's all you need in life.
How about Rihanna's Jump? What does Rihanna's Jump say about Tyler Oakley? He's already laughing.
I would say it is a song that anytime I hear, I just want to find a pole and just like go to town on it and work. Like, it's just like it's a stripper song, I feel. I recently went to a strip bar. And it was a strip club or whatever. I don't know what straight people call it, but it was a strip club. And it was, so it was half strip club, half, chicken, like fried chicken lunch buffet. So I was all over the buffet, but then Jump came on by Rihanna and I was watching the stage and this girl was getting it. Like, it was impressive. So I would say it's just like, you know what? Own who you are, own your sexuality, and just, you know, flaunt it.
I would just like to highlight that the whole I want to go find a pole thing was immediately preceded by, no, I would never take my shirt off. I'm very timid.
I mean, I'll do it fully clothed. But
hey, that all the more alluring. And then you also chose a Lady Gaga song, did you not?
Yes, Lady Gaga's my queen. I think I picked Shiza, right?
You did.
Yes. So I would say Shiza, if you listen to the lyrics, it's very much about being a strong, independent person. And I feel like that is how I try to live my life. I just moved to LA and I think I came here on my own. And I feel like it's a huge step in being, you know, an independent man. I just bought a car.
Look at you.
Get an apartment by myself. Like, it's just a big growing up experience, I think, 2013. So that is what the song is to me.
Lovely. Lovely. So what do we see? I feel like this is a job interview now. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? But really, what is the next incarnation of what it is that you do?
I would say taking it and creating a little empire is what I want to do. I want to keep doing what I'm doing. I love YouTube. I love the opportunities it's brought me. And I love the fact that I can connect with people in really real and meaningful ways. Because the viewers always keep coming back to YouTube. That is where I come from. And we, you know, we comment back and forth in the comment section. Like, that is where everything goes down. But at the same time, 5 years from now, I want to keep doing that, but I also want to be doing everything that I'm doing now, but full throttle. So I want to do red carpets. I want to do, correspondence stuff. I want to do, TV stuff. I want to do pop culture stuff. Yeah. I want to stretch what I'm doing now and kind of push my boundaries.
And pole work. Don't forget pole work.
Of course. Of course. Really, yeah, I think that's the most important thing.
Without question. Now, how can folks, of course, see all the cool things that you're doing?
You can find me anywhere on the internet. I am on Twitter, Tyler Oakley. Instagram, Tyler Oakley. YouTube, Tyler Oakley. Tumblr, Tyler Oakley. Facebook, The Tyler Oakley.
Oh, well, there you go.
Tyler Oakley was taken. And what else? I mean, anywhere, really, you can find me. I am very present online.
And a word of advice for our young listeners who are out there thinking, gosh, I don't know how to get my voice out there.
Keep creating. I would say it took me a few years to even make it an inch to the mile that I am today. But keep creating and believe in what you're doing because it plays a bigger part in what's going on in the world than
you think.
There you
go. There you go. Well, you have the tagline on all of your media. It says, don't take me too seriously. And of course, it's about having fun and there's such a great lighthearted air to it all. But I just want to put out there, you know, our show is about nothing if not folks using their voices. And what we will take seriously about what it is you do is that you, as I said at the start, you are an authentic, energy-filled voice. You put yourself out there. You say, this is me. This is who I am. And you invite others to the table. And we take that very seriously because it really is world-changing.
Well, thank you. That means the world to me. Thank you.
You're going to keep doing it?
Of course.
Of course. Thank you for being my Valentine.
Thank you for coming and being mine, too.
All the best, Tyler.
Thank you so much for having me. Bye, everyone.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, if you're gay and you have a computer that can hook up to that crazy internet world, then you know gay.com. I know you do. You've been there. And it's got a whole new look to it with new features, but we want to talk even more widely than that. And here to talk about gay.com is their brand manager, Brett Edwards Stout. Brett, welcome to the show, Is So Gay.
Well, thank you for having me.
I don't have a clue what a brand manager does. My hope is that you do.
I also hope that. I very much hope that. A brand manager basically looks out for the product welfare in every aspect, in every respect. I think if you're going to look at any kind of example to a brand that is perfectly managed, Apple is the most perfectly managed brand.
Okay.
You see anything from it, from its advertising to a product that you've never even seen before, and you know what it is. You know what to expect from it. You know how it's going to work, and it's so thoroughly done and well composed. And that's what a brand manager does. But they also look out for what should the brand be doing.
Okay.
What direction should the brand be going? So my responsibility at gay.com, especially coming on looking at redesigning the site, was what should gay.com be in a 21st century world? Gay.com is a very well-known brand. A lot of people are familiar with it, and I'm stoked to be able to be part of it right now. So
that's a good thing. It's a good thing. All right, let's break it down. So first, we want to be true to our brand. So for somehow folks who do not know about gay.com, I don't understand how that's possible, but how would you describe gay.com to folks?
If I were to describe gay.com in any particular way, gay.com was born in the mid-1990s as the answer to a new type of social networking. You know, we're talking pre-Facebook, pre-MySpace,
oh, yeah,
really hitting. The only way people had to communicate with one another really was on AOL's chat room.
Mm-hmm.
And it quickly became really understandable that we needed to have a space that was specifically gay, because there were certain needs that were not being met by those other types of communities. So as the internet was trying to figure itself out and we were trying to figure out how we wanted to use it as a people, gays as a subset group of that people needed to have our own specific needs met in a slightly different way. So in essence, we are the digital version of what a gay town square would be. We are the digital gay bar.
Nice.
Online.
Love that. Love that. And I should say, I met my ex-husband on gay.com. I thank you for the husband part. I don't blame you for the ex part. That one's on me. That one's on me, Brett. But it was the place where you met other people, particularly if you were in a place that didn't, if you were in a geographic location that didn't have the opportunity to really get together with other folks.
Or in a circumstance. I lived on gay.com a lot in my, you know, secret private life. I served for 5 years, I don't know if you know, in the U.S. Marine Corps. When I was in California serving in the Marines, I had nowhere else to turn. When I started to finally understand this about myself and needed a place to turn to, and gay.com was that place. It was the only place I could really go. It was the only safe place I felt that I could go and have a degree of anonymity and a reduced degree of fear.
I don't even know if you know, the original tagline for gay.com was "Where Marines can become brand managers."
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I guess I was, you know, lacking in my research.
I'm here to help. All right, so now you're looking you're looking at the site and you're thinking, "All right, we provide this meeting place for folks, but we're always looking to challenge ourselves." And so there was a whole big redesign that happened.
There was recently a redesign. We sat down with the general manager and the company really looked hard at what is gay.com doing, where is it going, what should it be doing, and really had a hard think about what is the future of the internet. So we are now post Facebook. We are also now entering into a space where we're about to be what you could call post display.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't be too techie and geeky. I'm a little bit techie and geeky. But we're moving away from our PCs. We're moving away from our desk-based computers into an environment that is mobile. There are predictions that say within the next 2 years, more than 50% of all web traffic will be generated from mobile sources.
Wow.
So as we move into that space, we really have to look at what is the future of the web and how does that impact gay.com and the way that we interact with one another online. And so simplicity is important and screen space is important and all in one window is important. So we really thought about, all right, so how do we do that? Because at the time, before we redesigned the site, one of the primary features was chat rooms, but the chat room system we had was set up so that it took up multiple windows. It was a really robust system. It worked really, really well. But if you got people actually doing what it was designed to do, which was to chat and people to be active in chat, how many lines, how quickly can you really read?
Right.
So if you look at how that works on a mobile device, it doesn't really work. So we had to really think about, okay, how is this going to function on a mobile device when we go forward? And the idea really is, a lot of ways, other sites have pioneered this for us, most notably like Facebook, an integrated type of messaging system where your emails and your instant messages and your chats are all the same type of construct. And they're all kind of together in one place, and you don't have to go to multiple sources to get it. So that was the biggest thing that people have really been talking about the redesign, and that's a lot of around which things for the new site were based. The other thing, I'll try not to be too long-winded.
No, you're good.
The other thing is that we really looked at where we are as gay people, and if you look at a lot of the sites, which we could refer to as the quick meetup sites, they're black room sites. They are this dark room. But we're moving into a time where we're going to be post-closeted. And there is a lot less to fear today than there was even 5 years ago.
Right.
And so we really wanted to design the site so that it was white, so that it was open, so that you didn't feel like you were sneaking onto the site. We wanted you to participate in the site. We wanted to move it into that same kind of realm of a white room site like a Facebook or a Match.com, if you will.
We love that.
So that was stylistically what we went for. And then the final component of that was, how does the community kind of, what does the community want? And if you look at what the community has been doing, in a lot of ways, the community has been splintering and splintering and splintering into all these kind of sub-fractions and sub-groups. However, we're not just, onlyleatherguys.com or onlycircuitguys.com,
right,
or onlytwinks.com. We are gay.com. We are all things. So we have to be in a place and consider the needs of the entire community over a specific subset while still providing those individual parts. And that's where we came up with the communities model.
How do you go about measuring success of a rebranding? So, you have this established product and people are interfacing with it, and then you set about, which can be very anxiety producing for people who are used to things, you make some changes.
Yeah.
How do you go about measuring, all right, were we successful in this?
You know, that's a tricky question, especially when you consider that, you know, we've been around since 1996. So when you say you're going to go and completely redesign the site, it's like going into Stonewall and saying, let's redecorate. It's, you know, there's going to be a certain amount of resistance you're going to meet, and it's going to be harsh, and people are going to be up in arms and because it's such a – it's going to be a shock to them. But we needed that shock. We needed that shock to update the site to the 21st century, and it's the rebuilding of the foundation of the site that's going to allow it to last another 20 years. And if that shock is you know uncomfortable a little bit, it's okay to be uncomfortable a little bit. Everyone will get used to it. But I would say that ultimately, statistics is really kind of how you measure it. You know, you're going to look at you know boring stuff to figure out whether or not it succeeded. But I can tell you, even in the, we're not even a full month into the launch, and we already have seen a tremendous kind of, we've seen our signups have jumped hugely.
Oh, great.
The amount of time people are spending on site has jumped hugely. People are sending messages more often. People are reaching out to one another. People are exploring the new parts of the site. So all the stats for the site are actually glowing. So it's successful so far. You know, I never want to predict what's going to happen in the future, other than that I'm going to keep rolling things out and keep moving the site forward.
Now, what about the critics? We have the critics who would, I don't know who they are, but I would imagine that there are critics who would say, you know, this is how people are meeting each other. What happened to just meeting people out and about and everybody's got their head down and people might be lying about who they are online and darn that gay.com for ruining everything.
People could be lying about who they are in person.
There's that.
I mean, we didn't invent Botox. not to begrudge Botox, but there's always the concerns that you create something that will create an environment that's more isolated. But I don't think that that's what we've done here. What I believe that we've created here is a companion to the real world. It's not about removing yourself from the real world. This is about getting online to create a sense of community that bleeds between the online world and the real world, because this is a site that's moving you again towards mobile. So where you are, you can be part of your online network in your downtime, but I would never encourage people when you're sitting around with your friends to jump onto a mobile site, you know, that, you know, those classic memes of, you know, great partying. You see it's a table full of people on their cell phones.
There you go. That's a fun time.
I know, right? But no, I think it's a companion and a tool to be used to assist you with the real world and making real world interactions.
Am I doing some revisionist history? Did there used to be women on the site or no?
There have always been women on gay.com.
Okay. And
women do make up a small amount of the population on gay.com. They're about 1%. They're an extremely important 1%. And we are always kind of trying to find our best way to find out how to serve that community.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of things on the table and a lot of things in the work for ways that we could possibly do that. But it's, you know, it's tricky when you're trying to serve that small, important group of people and still meet the needs of the other 99%.
And how trans-friendly would you say gay.com is?
It's the same kind of scenario for the female community and the trans community. Everyone is welcome on gay.com, and we have several things in the works for trying to make it even better for them so that they can participate in an even better, even broader way.
My assumption is that a brand manager's work is never done.
No. Especially not when you're dealing with the web, because it's an ever-changing place. You have to listen and respond to what is going on, and you also have to predict and try to be ahead of what's going on sometimes. And, you know, I think I would say on a personal level, I didn't necessarily know that was what I was doing, but I've always been very brand aware.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both of my parents are business owners back in the Midwest. I'm from Iowa. And I've known from a very early age that when I say or do something, that's a reflection upon my mother's character as much as it is my own.
Yeah.
And then when I swam competitively, it was the same thing. The team was very, very strong camaraderie, and everyone knew who was on the swimming team because, you know, we were the cool team at school. Nobody ever – because we never lost. So and if you're winning, everyone likes you. So for 6 years, we never lost.
And then some camaraderie there in the Marines.
And then, you know, the Marines, especially in the Marines, I think that was the – that's the strongest brand that I've ever been a part of. Because for the Marine Corps, a lot of times, and I try to explain to people the pressure sometimes of being a Marine, a lot of times you may be the only person, the only Marine that person ever meets in their life. And everything that they're going to think about all Marines is going to be based upon you. And that's pressure, but I've gotten so used to it that it's kind of second nature, and I love it. I don't know what my life would be if I wasn't thinking about the greater good of the things that I believe in. And I do believe in the site. I believe in it tremendously.
Well, let's be clear. You are the official This Show Is So Gay Marine representative.
Oh, well, thank you.
That's been going on for minutes now. And I didn't even think you were, I didn't even think you were aware of it. But my assumption is also on a personal level, see, I would never invite you to a party because my fear would be that you would look at everything and say, oh, I could totally rebrand this. So I don't know if that's...
I wouldn't do that until my thank you card.
Okay. I don't know if that's affecting your social life. I feel like maybe you have friends who aren't saying that to you, so I would like to serve that role right now.
Let me say that assumes that I, one, have a social life and do have friends. Just kidding.
So I mean, we're a helping show. We're a helping show.
Right.
We help our guests as much as they help us.
You're here for me, and I appreciate it.
Help me help you. Now... It seems sort of silly to ask, but where can folks go to learn all about the amazing things happening with gay.com?
That's the easiest thing in the whole wide world is that you would go to gay.com. You know, it's always simpler when your name is also your web URL.
Nice. I feel like there was someone at a meeting who said, should we maybe change the URL? And everyone just looked at them and they don't even work there anymore.
You ever wonder where those pens on your desk disappeared to? We stabbed him with them.
I miss that guy. It was a good time. And we should also put out there, and we'll be talking about this on next week's show, so don't ruin the ending for us, but you have some involvement with Here TV as well.
I certainly do. I am also the brand manager now of Here TV.
Nice.
So I'm new over there to Here TV. I've been working with gay.com for the last couple of years. I've been working with the redesign for longer than I should probably say, and on the site for even longer than that. So gay.com I'm really familiar with. I'm really glad to be part of the Here TV team now also.
And your offer, and I have to say, just to thank you for all of our listeners, your generous offer to do a whole rebranding study of This Show Is So Gay for free was just lovely. I thought that really...
My pleasure.
That was just commitment. I thought it was real commitment.
It was so gay.
We don't need rebranding. We just are that gay. Well, Brett, what a pleasure. I mean, as I said, you know, it certainly was a meeting place for me. I can't really think of the late 90s without thinking of gay.com. And I love that it has persisted in just this beautiful way and continues to evolve. And that idea of being this virtual town square, this virtual meeting place, you know, I talk to so many folks who just are in, not even just by circumstances as you so perfectly presented to us, but also those folks who are in those geographical locales who it's just not possible for them to interact with other gay people. And you guys provide that for them and provide an outlet for their voice. And that's pretty immeasurable right there.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
You're going to keep doing this?
Of course. What
else would I do? Gay.com, everybody, stroll on over. You can pick up some news. You can chat with people. It's mobile friendly. See all the fun things happening there. Brett, what a pleasure.
Thanks. And the apps are coming soon. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
All right, folks, I am here at the Brattleboro Art Museum. We so rarely interview people live, but one gentleman who we have interviewed live before, and he's here right now, John Scagliotti, the Emmy Award-winning producer, director, creator of In the Life, Before Stonewall, After Stonewall. It's been a while, John.
It has been a while. It's great to be here, Ken.
So we're here for a Coming Out Stories event. There's an exhibit here at the Brattleboro Museum. Did you have a chance to check out the exhibit?
It's beautiful. It is fantastic. I love Coming Out Stories, and I think it's appropriate that we're in a museum to tell them, because they're sort of like the only place where you could now do a coming out story is in a museum.
And you've seen quite the arc of what coming out means in our society, you know? Do you still feel it's quite the political act?
Oh, definitely around the world. It still seems to be in this country, too. I've always felt that coming out is the one political act that has made the difference of where we are today. The more people who come out, the more change happens. And so, and I am always astounded at how many people are still in the closet.
Right. Yes. Does it still take the same amount of bravery to come out as, say, it did during Stonewall?
I don't think so, but I don't know about bravery. It takes bravery to do anything.
Yes.
But I think the repercussions of coming out are less drastic, and so therefore are less, where you're going to lose your job or you lose your, you lose everything around you, end up in jail. I mean, it was pretty bad when I came out.
Yeah.
You know, things could really happen. And it now, you know, you have laws that might protect you. In Vermont, for example, you can't be thrown out of your apartment,
right,
or you can't be fired, things like that. So that makes it a little bit less a horror story. It's not so much coming out if you're sort of forced out by somebody else. And that's what used to happen
all the
time when they used to arrest people, stuff like that, and put you in the newspapers. You sort of, the coming out process in the old days was most of the time was the cops or somebody forcing you out publicly and ruining your life.
Well, we're going to go do a panel, so folks, you know, this isn't live, so you can't catch us tonight. But John and I will come to your town if you request us, and we'll do the panel again. But one of the reasons that I wanted you to have you on this week's show is to talk about what we talked about last time, because it's still going on, the Pride of the Ocean Tour.
Oh, yes, we're on our fourth cruise. It's amazing. It's so fantastic. It's getting bigger and bigger, and, you know, wonderful people are coming, and we show these great films. We take ourselves very seriously.
He says as he's laughing, yes.
On these films. So we really bring wonderful people and wonderful films. For example, this time where we have Cheryl Ferjanik, who's just finishing up her film on Greg Louganis. It is an amazing film. Mm. I've seen cuts and pieces of it, and we're doing a sneak preview of it on board. And then Greg Louganis will be joining us. So it's going to be, you know, that's pretty exciting. Yoruba Richin, who did The Promised Land on PBS, is just about ready to finish her The New Black, which is such an important film. It's about the African-American experience and gay and lesbian experience within the African-American experience, and really covering a lot of what happened since Obama came out for gay marriage and what effect that had in the African-American community, especially in places like in Baltimore, where I think before he made that statement, it was something like, 30% of the people supported gay marriage for that law in Baltimore, in Maryland. And then the swing was something like 30 points right after that. So it made a big difference in places like Maryland. So this is an important film, I think, and we're showing it on the ship. We're also showing I Do, which is a film about immigration and gay folks marrying, and this was going to happen right after the Supreme Court decision in June.
Yeah.
So we're having a panel after the film about what the Supreme Court means to you.
And it's that, I would imagine the tenor of that panel is going to change depending on what the decision is.
It is, will change. We have some really interesting, we have somebody from Freedom to Marry coming, and so it'll be an interesting thing because I have no idea. You know, we're creating a panel about something that hasn't
happened.
You
don't know what's going
to
happen.
No idea what's going to happen, so you're going to have to come on the cruise to find out.
Wow, there's going to be a toast either one direction or the other direction. So,
but the big thing about our cruise is that it's the people.
Yeah.
George Gustines, who wrote, he's the traveling editor for the New York Times, and he came and he wrote and he said, "Oh, it's a great cruise, a great great films. But the thing that was most astounding for him is the people we attract, the kinds of people who come on the cruise.
And who goes? It's filmmakers and people who want to watch
films.
Love films,
smart people.
Smart people.
So you're having dinner with people who know things and are interested in, like, I think people who like films are also people who are very in touch with things that are going
You're
on.
You're so biased.
You are so biased. As a filmmaker, I am a bit biased. But I've always found my audiences to be very brilliant.
Particularly those that love your films. I find those are the smartest.
Absolutely. And so, you know, you're surrounded by all these very smart people. And it really makes for a wonderful cruise, at least according to George. And I can't agree. I mean, I can't agree. It's just an amazing group of people who show up. We also do this thing called CineSlam, which brings a lot of young, emerging filmmakers who are just getting into the business, and they do workshops. And so there's this whole sort of energy that comes from being with a lot of, you know, filmmakers who are just there at the beginning, and they're all, you know, keyed up and interesting, and so they're fascinating. I just love it, and you get a chance to talk with people who are just beginning in their work as LGBT filmmakers.
Fantastic. So what's the website that everybody goes to learn more?
Oh, it's very, all you have to do is Google Pride of the Ocean.
Easy.
You can get there. Just Google Pride of the Ocean and you'll get there, and that's easier to remember.
And your big piece of advice for that young filmmaker who's got the content that they're just not sure, can this be a film, can it not, no one's going to accept my content. You, sir, know a thing or two about that.
I certainly do. Probably get into biology.
There you go.
Oh, it's hard to make films. Yeah. It really is. But now with all these new things like Kickstarter and all that,
people crowdsource funding.
People are, you know, coming up with imaginative new ways to get their films done. And so I would say, you know, be persistent. Persistence has always been the key, but there are ways out of this. And there's a lot of people a little bit older, have some experience, are willing to help.
All right. Where are your Emmy Awards? Where actually are they?
Are there book stops, aren't they?
No.
You know, they hold up the books. Oh, I know. They're somewhere. I find them when somebody says, oh, is that an Emmy Award? I say, oh, yeah.
I won an Emmy Award.
Yes, they're holding up books.
I'm kidding, folks. You can't see, but he brought them with him to this panel. No, he didn't. All right, so, folks, go Google Pride of the Ocean. Go get your tickets. I might go.
Oh, it'd be so wonderful to have you and have this show on there. All your fans would just love it.
I would love it. I should tell you, I've never been on a cruise before.
Oh, you have to come.
You're going to Alaska? Is that where it's going?
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Great films, great food, great locations. Alaska. Glacier Bay. It'll be fantastic. It is fantastic. I think Glacier Bay.
That could be my first cruise.
Yeah, it would be fantastic to have you too.
John Scagliotti, always a pleasure.
It is great. Thank you very much, Ken.
All right, folks, only a little bit of time left on this week's episode. In fact, only a few minutes. But I did want to throw a couple LGBT news stories out at you in case you missed them. Out in the world of comic books, one of the favorite topics of conversation for this show is So Gay. There's a lot of drama going on with Superman. If you did not hear, Orson Scott Card, who is a very noted sci-fi fantasy writer, he's certainly a name that I know because, you know, I read a lot of sci-fi and fantasy growing up for escapism because there was a lot of homophobia, but not so much in the books that I was reading. Anyway, Orson Scott Card was hired by DC to write, be one of the authors of the new Adventures of Superman, but it turns out, and I totally didn't know this, Orson Scott Card, he's a board member of the National Organization for Marriage. That's right. The notoriously anti-gay National Organization for Marriage. Well, some folks are stepping up and saying, this is not okay. This is a position of influence when you're writing one of the most noted comic books in our era. So Richard Neal, the owner of Dallas's Zeus Comics, he is refusing to stock the new installment of The Adventures of Superman because it was written by outspoken homophobe Orson Scott Card. Not really sure how I missed the whole piece where Orson Scott Card is a really notable homophobe, but yeah.
not good, dude. And we don't want you writing Superman, because Superman stands for unity and patriotism and bringing people together, and not the National Organization for Marriage. So good job, Richard Neal, Dallas's Zeus Comics. Our own, and I say our, as in we all live in Vermont, but we don't, because you guys are listening all over the world. Senator Patrick Leahy, senator from Vermont, he wants the government to start affording same-sex married couples the same immigration benefits that heterosexual couples now enjoy. This would be huge. Senator Leahy says he will introduce the Uniting Families Act, a bill that would provide spousal immigration benefits to same-sex couples. He discussed it briefly during a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on immigration reform. That would be huge. I know a lot of LGBT couples really struggle with the immigration policies because the lack of benefits and just the threat of not having their relationships recognized could result for some of our international couples, or when one partner is international, could result in some really tragic circumstances. There was a case here, right here in my area of Vermont, in Putney, Vermont, just one town away, or Dummerston, Vermont. It was only one town away. That's the point of it, where there was a couple really struggling enormously with immigration reform here, with the threat of one partner being deported, despite the fact that they've been here for so many years and their relationship is recognized here in Vermont. So hoping that Senator Leahy is able to enact some change there. And then the last story comes to you. Oh, man, he's a funny one. From Neil Clark Warren. Do you know Neil Clark Warren? You might not know the name, but you totally know his voice and his face, because he is the dude who heads up eHarmony. So when that Natalie Cole Everlasting Love piano riff plays there, and that guy comes on with the white hair and the glasses, and he says, "We all deserve love," that's Neil Clark Warren. Except that, I don't know if you know, he's not talking about all of you. He's really talking about the straight couples. eHarmony, and by the way, let's note the irony in the name eHarmony, they are notoriously anti-gay and were forced by the New Jersey Supreme Court to add a whole section to their website so that gay couples could, hey, maybe find some love as well. He is now saying, quote, "I think this issue of same-sex marriage within the next 5 to 15 years will be no issue anymore. We've made too much of it. I'm tired of it. It has really damaged our company. And when the Attorney General of the state of New Jersey decided that we had to put up a same-sex site, and we did it out of counsel that if we didn't do it, we were not going to have a business in New Jersey, we literally had to hire guards to protect our lives because the people were so hurt and angry with us. We're Christian people who feel that it's a violation to Scripture." I'm not going to do a lot of commentary on this one, except to say that the name of the organization is eHarmony. Harmony. Not so much. A bit of a misnomer. That is all we have time for on this week's show, folks. Just some news stories to spark some rainbow water cooler conversation. Huge, huge thanks to Tyler Oakley. Love having him on the show and what he's doing. To Brett Edwards Stout, gay.com, strolling over there. And of course, to our buddy John Scagliotti. Love talking to people in person. Don't have the opportunity nearly enough to do that. Get out there, folks. Go do some incredible things. Use your voice the way that you know how to use it. And it could be so many different ways, but it's the way you know how to use it to create some change in this world. And while you're out there creating change, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Guess it's all good. You can play the game, I'ma still do my thing. You know better with her, it's a beef foot. When you put them other girls, I bet they be wondering why you always call my name. You think I'm gonna wait around, I ain't got all day. You don't need another lover, don't you let it. No, if you want it, let's do it. Ride it, my pony. My saddle is waiting. Coming, jumping. jump on it. If you want it, let's do it. Ride my pony.